Today is August 30th. It's our second Mishle class.
And we're running through the front page of the syllabus, which is available on yu.edu. And of course, anytime you study a book of the Bible, you must look at the father of Parshanut, Rashi. You know, Rashi himself is based on Mamre Chazal. We'll, of course, see how Chazal treat Mishle, which we're going to start with, actually, right after we finish this list. I wrote School of Kimchi. The most famous Kimchi is David Kimchi, the Radak. Right? Very famous family. Maybe they were bakers. That's how they came to be called Kimchi. But there were three Kimchis. In fact, there's a sefer that just recently came out, including all three of their commentaries to Mishle in the same sefer. Yosef, Moshe, and David. Meiri has an important parish to Mishle, School of Rokeach. Now, I write School of Rokeach. You know, if you go into my office, it's 228. On top of the fridge, you see a bunch of books that look like this. Get yourself one. Okay, I wrote the School of Rokeach because. Because I didn't want to be overly imposing in my introduction. I wrote, in the very least, it is from the school of the Rokeach, which means Mibes Midrasho Shal Rokeach, from a student who followed his path. He never announces himself, but in my introduction, I give all kinds of reasons why I think it's the Rokeach, right? Based on his other work that is most famous, called the Sefer HaRokeach. Right? That work was in other people's homes already in his lifetime before his works were destroyed. Right? By the evil crusaders. Right, so if there's parallel passage between the two, full disclosure, he has come out with a commentary of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah and the Chamesh Megillos. That is very much, I would say, my work is too contested. Anytime you come up with a new commentary, there are going to become people who say that it's not necessarily a commentary, which is why I wrote School of Rokeach. You can't disagree with that. Every single line in this book is the kind of stuff Rokeach writes. Right? It's not Rokeach, it was inspired by the Rokeach. The line is that, let's say I have a pasuk that says, if you increase laziness, you will increase hunger. Right? Whatever. And in the book, in that pasuk, the word for increase is Yosef. Right? And then later in the pasuk, actually a paraphrase, but it says, you will hear bad news if you're lazy. Right? So the word is Yishma for what you will hear. Right? So this is the kind of commentary this is. So in some of them, it's just something like this. There's a Gemara in Baba Basra that says that when Rabbah and Rav Yosef argue, the halacha is always like Rabbah, except in four cases. Those four cases are Rosh Tevos, Yud Shin, and Emayim. Need I say more? All right, I'm not going to get into it now, and I actually go in the footnote on that particular pasuk, go through what the different opinions of whether this is only in Baba Basra, whether it's in all of Shas, whether it's only in Ezekiel, we've shown and really have a big discussion of what the Gemara means by the halacha is always like Rabbah, but only like Rav Yosef, and then it gives you four examples, and the Rashi tables of those four examples spell this word. So he's always looking for any kind of hint in the pasuk that connects to things that come out later, right? Okay, so So that's so I wrote school of Rokeach to be safe.
Okay, some of you want to. By the way, the notes to the Chamesh Megillos and the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. When I say notes, I mean the notes at the bottom. So you have the text. You have Rashi, because you always have to quote Rashi in any commentary. Then you have the Perush of the Rokeach, and then I have my notes at the bottom. The notes for the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, which came out about 30 years ago, right? The notes are written by what is now considered, now with the death of a number of Rosh Hashiva in the last few years, was unequivocally considered the Godel Hador of this generation. His name is Chaim Kanievsky. He's the son of the Steiklogon, the nephew of the Chazon Ish. He wrote those notes 30 years ago. So when I was coming out, it was 5 years ago, so I took it to him, and his sister had just died. He was very morose, but his shaman said, listen, you're here in Israel, I'll bring you into him. He gave me a long time, and he actually wrote in his handwriting a very short haskama, something he never does. Right? It's very difficult to get a handwritten haskama. Usually he'll send, just by word of mouth, and then someone says, yes, he saw this book, and he said, he thinks it's a good idea. And then you could let the chips fall where they may if he's lying. I don't know. But he actually wrote with his handwriting, to reiterate with Rav Chaim Kabarsky. Most people don't know me. These are four of the Gedolim of the previous generation in B'nai Brak. So Rokeach is someone that is very big in that community. In Israel, I thought that was the direction to go. Baruch Hashem, I sold about 2,000 of them, which is pretty good for a Hebrew Sefer. Be that as it may, as I told you last class, it's a mitzvah to put out his works. He wrote over 60 Sfarim, and most of them never saw the light of day because the Second Crusade destroyed much of his material, and only whatever was in someone else's household at the time, because he was quite popular, he was copied over, had seen the light of day. Right? Okay. Next is the Vilna Gaon and the Malbim. Vilna Gaon is, of course, a parish of the whole Tanakh, as does the Malbim. Why I chose them is Vilna Gaon's parish of Mishlei is legendary. This is what about his parish of Yom? Okay, every parish of his has said something remarkable to it. Right? You will just by analysis of a few of his commentaries, we'll see what it's about. The purpose of picking these particular commentaries is over this semester is to analyze a few of them and learn about their particular derech through this study. You can go into a Sfarim store now and buy something called Malbim on Mishlei. It's amazing. It's a small little book, not much, about smaller than this, about the size of this, but half the thickness. And it's the full Malbim on Mishlei translated into English. It's, to my knowledge, the only work of the Malbim that is translated into English. Malbim stands for Meir Leibish Ben Yechiel Michael. He lived in the middle of the 19th century. You should be aware of him. He is perhaps of note until his time, perhaps the only commentary where we have in our possession the full corpus of every one of the 24 books of Tanakh. That cannot be said of Rashi. We do not have Rashi on the whole Tanakh. Right? We don't have a doc on the whole Tanakh. We don't have a doc on four books of the Torah. We don't have a doc to Bereishis. That doesn't mean they didn't write on the other books. We just don't have it. You don't have Ibn Ezra to a lot of Nevi'im Rishonim and a lot of Ksuvim, right? Okay, Rashi to Divrei Hayomim, although if you open up a Divrei Hayomim, it will say Rashi. The good money is that it's not Rashi. Smart money is that it's not Rashi. Quotes Rashi. All right, he disagrees with Rashi and Sefer Melachim on many parallel sukkim. Plus, the Radak, when he wrote his commentary to Divrei Hayomim, and Radak lived a good 150 years after Rashi, he writes, until this date, there is no commentary to Divrei Hayomim that I'm aware of. How could the Radak not be aware of something that Rashi wrote if it was commonly used? You know what I'm saying?
ask the guy off the street. Maybe he's not aware, but Radak should be aware if there was a Rashi. There are some times in Rashbam, Rashbam is Rashi's grandson, where he writes, my grandfather told me this about the Pasuk in Devar Yamim. It appears actually in last week's Torah reading, last week's commentary to Parshas Kisetze. It doesn't mean that Rashi wrote the commentary to Devar Yamim. It means he explained to his grandson in some kind of parish to Devar Yamim. Okay, but the Malbim goes straight through. It was commentary to the whole thing. And to my knowledge, there's no other parish of his to the Tanakh that's translated into English in such a usable fashion. So it's really quite remarkable. Okay, let's talk about some of these topics. Everybody have your view? Okay. So the authorship of Mishle traditionally is considered to be Shlomo HaMelech. Right? Okay. I'm going to leave it at that. The Gemara in Bava Basra,
Daf Yud Daled, which lists a full, it's the oldest bibliography of Tanakh, of history. It lists all the books of the Nevi'im Ksuvim and their authors. Okay. And it considers Mishlei, Koheles, Shir HaShirim, and one more book, Yeshayahu, what? To all be the products of, you got it right, Hizkiyahu.
What? How could that be? Didn't I just say about 2 minutes ago that the author of Mishle is Shlomo HaMelech? It says Mishle Shlomo Ben David.
So many Gemaras that say, what did Shlomo mean by this pasuk in Mishle? So how can this bibliography in Bava Basra, what's this doing in Bava Basra? The first parak of Bava Basra is called Perak HaShutfin, which is all about partnerships and how to dissolve partnerships.
One of the questions the Gemara asks, it's a Mishnah actually, says, what if two people have equal dibs in this Tanakh?
How would we end up getting the dibs in this Tanakh? Gemara's case is, although there might be others, is that we're brothers and both inherited from our father, all of his farim. So we own, all of us own exactly half of all his farim. Now, if daddy has two shasas, you say, I'll take this one, you take that one. Right? But he only has one Tanakh. You can imagine that at that time, they didn't have a lot of farim. But they have one Tanakh, all bunched together. That's the Gemara. Then it discusses whether or not you're even allowed to do that. Right? Or it's in scrolls. One big scroll with the whole Tanakh in it. How are you going to divide this? Right? Are you allowed to divide it? Right? Daddy has one Torah. What are we going to do with it? I want it and you want it. They're going to cut it in half and you take Brachos and Shmos and I'll take a minute. It's crazy. Right? An ad for a divorce lawyer, and it had a picture of a chainsaw cutting furniture in half, and it said, having a messy divorce, call us. You know what I'm saying? In other words, in Perek HaShutfin, the suggestion actually comes up to right before this Gemara about, do you actually divide? How do you divide things that don't divide well? Right? If you're getting along, you should say, all right, you take the couch, I'll take the dining room table, you take the bedroom. You know what I'm saying? But if when two brothers, each of them want the Tanakh, right, what are you supposed to do? And the Gemara discusses what if they're willing to separate the Tanakh, are you allowed to? So as a tangent to that whole discussion is, so what's in a Tanakh? Okay, if you took me for intro, quite a bit of time was spent on discussing that. But what does it mean that Hizkiyahu wrote these books that the Gemara always tells us Shlomo wrote?
Okay, so if you did take me for intro, I'll just repeat this quickly. Is that I'll use as a parable to this the very first work of Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik was a book called Reflections of the Rav. It came out in the 50s. reflections of the Rav. Second edition came out a few years later. It was written by a man named Avraham Besdin, B-E-S-D-I-N. His brother taught here for many years. He was the head of the James Stryer School. I think it still exists, JSS. He established JSS back in the 40s and the early 50s. So Avraham Besdin attended the shir and wrote down over time reflections of Rav Soloveitchik's on the parsha. Was it Lumbus? Was it on the Gemara? Was on the parsha? Right. Okay. Now you know everyone who went to a shir and has private notes comes out with the Rav on Sukkah. Let's see if it sells. Right. I have this chus of being in the shir for 2 years. The last 2 years he gave shir. Whose words are you reading when you open that book? Who penned the words that you're reading?
100%.
What?
100%.
Are you sure? Well, the one who wrote that.
100%.
Come on, let's hear the argument. Talk to me. Soloveitchik never put pen to paper to say to send to a publisher. Certainly not at that time. Right? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So when the actual words you're reading, whose are they? Does anybody have any doubt here? All right. So just say the name. Oh, come on. A book came out, and by the way, if you own one, it says Soloveitchik down the binding, right? But come on, the Rav, he might have looked it over before it went out, and the word on the front page, it says if there are any misconceptions here, the mistake is totally mine. The Rebbe did not. It's my. Come on, whose words are you reading? Avraham Besdin. It's his book, right? The reason for this, there's a big difference, one major difference between my parable and the example of the Tanakh. Come on, talk to me, think a little bit. Don't just let me throw information to you. What's one obvious, very significant difference between the two? Is it Avraham Besdin and Rav Moshe and Yosef Ber Soloveitchik were contemporaries? They lived at the same time. So maybe you can look at Avraham Besdin's writings and say, yeah, okay, I glanced through it, I read, okay, you know, it reflects what I said what I said in class. Okay? So go for it. You can even get the proceeds of whatever profits. Right? You did the work. You just sat in my class. And you put a book out of my class. You follow what I'm saying? This happens all the time today. It's not the Gedolim themselves who actually write out and send and work with publishers. It's the Talmidim who are doing it. Right? But this might have been just a business decision to write Soloveitchik here. Soloveitchik, ooh, let me see what the Rav is saying here. Besdin, not so much. You get it? Right? But whose wisdom are you reading? Who's by the admission of the author? Of Soloveitchik. You follow? Now, the difference here, though, is that Chizkiyahu, while being a direct descendant of Shlomo, lived 300 years later. Why did he have to do this? What did he do? Can anyone here guess what he did? Well, if you took intro, I mean, maybe you remember. What did he do?
Burned it down.
What?
Burned it down.
He?
Burned it down.
No, there was stuff written before Chizkiyahu. What did he do to it? Everybody open up to Perek Chaf Hei Pasuk Aleph in Mishlei. Go ahead, Luna. Yeah. Open up to Perek Chaf Hei, the first of you that gets to it, just start reading, please. Go. No. Read out loud.
Oh.
The book itself. It's come here ready to learn. Come on, talk to me. This is a terrible anachronism, isn't it? The Chizkiyahu is 300 years later than Shlomo. How is there a pasuk in the book that says these are all the Mishle of Shlomo, Asher Heetiku? Can you give me a good explanation of Heetiku in light of what we're saying here?
Copy.
Copy isn't what it means in a Hebrew dictionary. Tell me what it means in light of what we're saying here. Because if it's copied, you should get credit for writing a book that you just copied? Because Gyo is a flagrant plagiarizer? Good. Give me a good... now, reevaluate your translation of that Tikkun and what we're saying here. These are the proverbs of Shlomo that Chizkiyahu
rewrote it.
Yeah. Well, rewrote is getting closer, but there's a better English word to use. Chizkiyahu what?
Compiled.
Okay, it could be that it wasn't in a book form and he had to put it in the form it has now, which is what we're certainly going to say. I would rather say the word edited. Does that make sense to you? Okay. In other words, and this Chazal tells us in other places, I've sent to you to a work known as Avos to Rabbi Nassim. Have you heard of that? Avos to Rabbi Nassim. It's what some scholars think is the Tosefta to Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos has 5 or 6 chapters, whether the 6th is originally part of Avos or not, but we'll get into now. But Avos to Rabbi Nassim has two versions, and they have over 40 chapters. Got it? It's 40 chapters of Pirkei Avos. You should know about it. It's called Avos to Rabbi Nassim. Okay? In chapter 34 of Avos to Rabbi Nassim, we're told that the works of Shlomo were so complicated that they were not available to the average person. They were not usable to the average person. It was too difficult. If you try reading sometimes the works of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, some of the works that Rav Soloveitchik himself wrote. I have his doctoral thesis. It's written in German. And it's translated. I have someone translate it. It is, even the title is incomprehensible. Right? You need a dictionary for every word. For every sentence. Right? So, if you're Shlomo HaMelech, this is accessible. Know what I'm saying here? So for 300 years, Shlomo's work sat there like that. Were they canonized? I don't know what was canonized outside of the Torah at that time. I'm willing to say that until Ezra, I don't know. Look, even later, if you remember from intro, there were some books like Yechezkel, Esther, and all three of these whose canonicity was questioned, whether it belongs in a holy corpus known as the Tanakh. This Gemara, Baba Basra decides. But I got to tell you, the Gemara Baba Basra is a Brisa. There are Amoraim who still discuss whether some of the books that Brisa includes really belong or not. Got it? Rav and Shmuel discuss whether Esther is part of it. That's after a Brisa. Okay, you staying with me? All right? So does everybody see that when the Gemara attributes Mishle amongst Shlomo's other works to Chizkiyahu, I am using this Mendrashim Avos to Rabbi Nassim to explain what that means. Until Chizkiyahu, Shlomo's works were largely inaccessible to people. Now that he put it into the form we have now, we don't have what it looked like before that. So therefore, the Gemara attributes it to Chizkiyahu. Don't be surprised. And the siyua to this is the fact that Chizkiyahu was mentioned in a pasuk in one of Shlomo's works. Right? Okay. Right. So, Tosfos and Rashi on that Gemara say, quote, a third Maamar Chazal, a Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin, at the end of Sanhedrin, Perek Chelek, where the Gemara says that Chizkiyahu established learning centers that really made everyone in Israel very, very accomplished in learning. It's an interesting minor because it says every boy and girl, not just boy, but the girls too. This should have fast-forwarded Sarashnira, right? Every boy and every girl knew Kodshim and Taharos. It's obviously an exaggeration, but it just means that he spread the study of Torah throughout Israel significantly more than everyone before him. So don't be surprised that we're going to attribute some of the books of Tanakh, especially where he's mentioned, to Chizkiyahu. Okay? Everyone okay with that now so far? All right. Now, right under authorship, this is... Any of you in my intro course?
No.
Now... No, this took already. Okay. But you remember we had a discussion on canonization also. It was the process whereby a book gets to be included in this august list. Canonization of Mishlei was... Mishlei is one of those five books whose canonization is questioned. Okay? All three of these, in addition to Cheskel... and Esther. Well, three of these in addition to Yechezkel and Esther. Now, if we comb through all these sources, and there are a good 25, 30 of them, and just to recognize the name of the book, okay, there's a book by that very name, that's the name of the book, Canonization. It was the grand work, it's the doctoral thesis of one of our great scholars of our generation, Dr. Sidney Z. Lyman. I wrote my master's thesis for him. His doctoral work was on canonization, how books came to be included in the corpus of the Hebrew Bible. He wrote it at Yale, say about 50 years ago, maybe, I don't know. Still around, Baruch Hashem. So if he posits that if you take all the reasons in Chazal for why these five books, all the opinions, what these five books lack that we think they don't belong in Tanakh, Cheskel, he contradicts Sefer Torah, Mishlei, they're contradictory Pesukim internally, right? Gemar Chagiga, Yecheskel, someone died while studying Yecheskel because he understood too much too quickly and it overtaxed his brain and he just lost his faculties and he died. Child. Or Yeduka, someone like young, right? And Kohelis, it leads one to possible heresy, right? Kohelis, another Medrash says that Kohelis is just Chochmah, there's no prophecy in it. Right? Mishlei, the same complaint, there's no prophecy in it. So if we collect all of these, right? Shir Shirim is just a silly tale of a love story between a man and a woman. If we collect all of these objections, get it? And then we peruse the 30 or so solutions that the rabbis give to these objections, we can, through this, create criteria whereby the rabbis felt a book belongs or a book doesn't belong. Because there are 24, and you better believe there were many more times that people have, at different times in history, tried to insert and get in there, especially in the New Testament, in the evangelicals. Which made a Tana in the Sefer Sanhedrin, where this whole discussion appears at the end of the Gemara, say, "Hakorei b'sforim chitzoniim ein lo chelek la'olam haba." If you read those outside books, you lose your destiny of afterlife. What are those outside books, the Gemara asks? What would you call outside books by someone writing in the year 100? Testament. Because there are lots of people who are trying to get the New Testament included in the Jewish Bible. They're all Jews. They're practicing Jews. Christianity was a sect of Judaism until 325, 200 years after this statement was made. Okay? The Gemara suggests, but there might be another opinion, that it's the Apocrypha. Are you familiar with that? It's called today, they call it Ksuvim Achronim. The Apocrypha are certain works that you, of which you're probably familiar. The Book of the Maccabees, the Book of the Hashmonaim, also called. The Book of Judith, Yehudis, the woman who got Heliopornis drunk and then cut off his head. Right? The Book of Tobit, Hina, Aroch. These are all books with good Jewish themes. Right? The question is, are they canonical? Right? So I left you with last class. What does it mean to read a book as if though it's... Oh, no, no, it's my intro class. I left off with Mishlei. What does it mean to read a book that is part of Tanakh? Right? Let me explain. The person in Maseches Shabbos, Maseches Samhit, who says that... The person, Rabbi Akiva, who says that you lose your Olam Haba if you read those outside books. So the Gemara first discusses whether it's the New Testament. There's evidence in the Talmud that rabbis of the Talmud just knew the New Testament and they never responded to it. They read it. But what does the Mishnah mean when it says, don't read these books? So the Gemara then says, maybe it's the Apocrypha. Gemara itself is Apocrypha. The Talmud quotes the Apocrypha all the time. Which book is he talking about? Sefer Ben Sira. In a class in Mishlei, it's crucial that you understand there's a book out there that looks just like this. In fact, I don't want to put you to the test here, but if I just at random read a pasuk from this Mishlei, this is the whole one, this is the one that's in Tanakh, and a book from Mishlei Ben Sira, I'll bring it to class next time. I have my own. Listed in a small book called Ksuvim Achronim, the whole Apocrypha is there, right? And if I would read, you wouldn't differentiate between the two. They're similar. Similar scope, similar message, right? So in Sanhedrin, the Tzadik Test, the Gemara says, we don't like Ben Sira because it's contradictory and they're a foolish psukim. They're simple psukim. The Gemara just left it at that until Abaye comes up and says, Abaye was, what an interesting twist here. Abaye was orphaned as a child, and Rabba, Yosef's Bar Punta, right? Remember that earlier? Rabba raised him as his own. Okay? And Rabba's wife schooled Abaye in all kinds of really esoteric teachings. And he says, my mother, obviously his adopted mother, taught me great secrets in Mishlei Ben Sira. It was people who studied it. Right? Abaye is a pretty serious guy. Right? Don? Okay? So, Abaye answered up all of the objections that all the rabbis had to these contradictory psukim in Mishlei Ben Sira. But then they said, you know what? As far as canonization goes, it's beyond the prophecy. It's not written prophetically. Ben Franklin also wrote nice proverbs. That doesn't mean it's part of Tanakh. Right? Here is where we come to our question here. We'll close class with this probably. Is what does it mean to read Mishlei as Tanakh and read Mishlei Ben Sira, Mishlei Ben David, of course, as part of Tanakh, while reading Mishlei Ben Sira or Homer or the Iliad or... You know what I'm saying? Or Socrates, or any other great piece of literature that people have read over the ages that's worth reading, right? What does it mean you can't read these works? There's a Tosfos in Erevin, Daf Samachay, that collects all of the, or as many as he could, remember, places the Book of Linings for canonization. It's exhaustive. Chazal quote Mishlei Ben Sira many times. Tosfos collects about 7 or 8 of them in one Tosfos. He's aware of the fact that the Talmud quotes Mishlei Ben Sira to teach good teachings. There's sometimes where the Talmud quotes it. He says, here's a pasuk in the Torah, a pasuk in the Vim, and a pasuk in Ksuvim. And the pasuk in Ksuvim tells us, right, I looked through all Ksuvim, I couldn't find this pasuk. It must be in Mishlei Ben Sira. It must be that he didn't have a Mishlei Ben Sira or to look it up. Or he had it, but he didn't care to spend to waste time looking for it. And if it's a Mishlei Ben David, I'm going to read through all the Mishlei Ben David to find it. I couldn't find it. It's in Mishlei Ben Sira. All right? Okay?
If you learn Pirkei Avos, there's a mission in Pirkei Avos that says, Amar Rabbi Levitas, Heve ma'od ma'od shval ruach, ki tikva seno shrima. Be very humble because our end is the worm. That's exactly a pasuk in Mishnah Ben Sira. He doesn't quote him, he just says, Amar Rabbi Levitas, and he says, Mamsha quote of Mishnah Ben Sira. The rabbis read it. So what is a mission? We keep us saying Rabbi Levitas lost his olam haba? All these quotes of Mishnah Ben Sira lose their olam haba. So quote, talk to me. What would you think Rabbi Akiva means when he says, if you read Mishlei Ben Sira, you lose your olam haba, in light of the fact that the rabbis obviously read it?
If one reads it as the word of God.
Correct. As prophetic. In other words, if when I'm reading Ben Franklin, and I come across some of his advice, his almanacs, that just rubs me the wrong way. So I'm going to say it's just Ben Franklin. Right, Colin? There might, by the way, be a good reason why I don't want to read Musar from Ben Franklin, because I don't want to put a bad light on one of our founding fathers, but he did not personally live up to a lot of his advice about a lot of things. Right? He did give in to a lot of vices. He was banished from France, for goodness sakes, for some indiscretions. Right? But he had some good things to teach. I might think, since Mishlei is the first great book of Musar in the history of man, I might think that one of you, Chas v'Shalom, if when you get to be 80 years old you have a heart condition, you may go to what you're told is the finest doctor for heart disease, and you come into his office, maybe again, when you're 80, maybe this isn't even an Indian, but let's say it's happening today. When you go to the doctor's office and he comes, walks in, you see, he's 120 pounds overweight. I see an ashtray filled with cigarette butts on his desk. There's a big liquor cabinet there and a half-eaten pastrami sandwich on his desk. What is this guy doing helping me with my heart disease? He obviously doesn't take any of his own advice. Now, I don't know if that typology actually exists. That I'm just making up. But I do know someone who was a great, great marriage therapist and was married 5 times. He knew exactly what could go wrong in every marriage because he managed to put them into his own. You hear it? So, do you go to him for advice? He's very good. He gets everybody to solve their problems. He gets so that is that's the question. Do you don't follow your own advice? Why should I take advice from you? We can quibble and argue about that, but no one wants to take Musar from someone who doesn't live up to it. I don't want an ethicist who's sleeping with his students. A famous ethicist of the 20th century that was it was a known secret, and he would give better grades to the ones who gave in to him. That's ethical. But you can't take a 20th century philosophy course without studying this person. I won't mention his name, but maybe not. But you get the point, right? Look, everyone has weaknesses. Who am I to judge? But the point is that when the rabbis tell us to read Mishlei Ben David as part of Tanakh, and you get up to that pasuk, I'll tell you one. You get up to a pasuk that says, Ohev Bino. I'll give you the other pasuk. It says, Choseich Shivto Sone Bino. Choseich Shivto Sone Bino.
It even rhymes. Remember I told you last time, stolen waters and fruit. Anybody know a common saying? I don't know if I knew it in my time, but a common saying that fits this is spare. Anyone know it? The rod. You never heard this? You're too young to hear this. In my day, this was, and spoil the child. So here's where we can have a cultural gap. In my day, everybody knew this saying. I went to school up this block where teachers hit us, punched us. I'm not talking about a slap a little bit in the sleeve or throw chalk at you. I have visions in my head of teachers. Today there's a police officer waiting with handcuffs at the door. Before that teacher leaves the building. Right? If you put a kid up a swift patch on a city bus, there's a police officer waiting to take you to jail. I don't know what they're doing with the kid while they're doing that, but all right. Right? I think today, if you've seen the streets beating a dog, there are mobile units here in the city that'll arrest you. But not too many generations ago, right? In living memory, right? Things were very different. Now, chosech means if you spare. That's really what the good translation. Shivto is a rod. Shevet is a stick. Okay, a scepter. Sone, right here it says spoil. But this is harsher. If you spare your rod on your child, you don't engage in corporal punishment with him, then you are spoiling that kid, or you hate it. You hate the kid. Because you're going to raise an Avshalom. You're going to raise an Adoniyahu. You're going to raise an Amnon. Interesting, I wouldn't say this myself if I didn't see it in the commentary, but the Das Zinu says that there is a... It's actually based on the Medrash HaGadol. I saw it in the Medrash HaGadol in Bereishis. That there is a certain typology of child in Tanakh who is the child of elderly parents, an only child. The parents were waiting a long time to have him because they were probably... She was not Akara for a long time. And when that child is born, that child is going to be indulged. Parents are wealthier at the time, right? But there are different things parents do if you have a large family, the parents take a lot of pictures of the first or the first two children, right? And then we get up to child 3, 4, 5, 6. We were very mocked to take a lot of pictures of each child. In my family, I don't know, I have two pictures of myself as five or younger. I don't have anything as a young child. But we have albums and albums of my older brother and older sister. And me and my younger sister, we have nothing. It's like, what are we, stepchildren or something? No, we didn't have, by that time, when we had him, he was the only one. Right? When we had you, we were busy doing homework with the other. We didn't have time for those things. Right? When you have one, you can say, okay, take a picture. When you have three running around, you go, hey, don't jump in there. How am I taking a picture? Right? So you see that things can change dramatically, and obviously the pasuk is talking about discipline. So can you think of some Tanakh characters that fit this mold? Only child, born to much older parents, and also when the parents are older, they're wealthier. Right? That's moving in the other direction. Now I have a much bigger house now. We have a bigger car. You know, when those kids were born, we just had this ancient car that always got stuck on the highway. Now we have... So, who do you have here? I think you mean Yitzchak. Okay. Shmuel wasn't waited for at all. She became pregnant right away. Yitzchak is what you're thinking of. Or Shimshon. Right? So the Medrash HaGadol says these, it points out things about them being spoiled.
Shimshon says to his parents, I want that girl. He goes, you can't have that. She's a Philistine. There's not enough Jewish girls for you to marry? He goes, well, I want that one. And they go and they indulge him. Yitzchak, he said, I wouldn't say this, but I saw it in the Das Kenyan Valley Hedosmus, and I saw it in the Mekrish HaKlalo, that Yitzchak was bought by Esav because he loved his food. Right? When you love your food, you gotta have it. That's a reason to favor Esav, because he puts good food in your mouth. Rashi mentions that perish, but then mentions another one, that tzayed befiv doesn't mean the tzayed in the mouth of Yitzchak, but the tzayed in the mouth of Esav, who was a big con man. They believe he was something he wasn't. All right, but that's unfair. So let me ask you this question. I come across this pasuk and I say, I can't accept it. I've raised a bunch of kids and I've never touched them. Really, I never. Hashem gave us a big Julius Maximus to use as a pache territory, to get kids not to run into the street. But good parents know how to use other mechanisms. Right? The carrot and the stick, you don't have to actually hit. Right? Good parents, you have to know how to discipline. If you're not disciplining well, all the screaming and all the hitting in the world aren't going to work. And if you discipline properly, then a good wink and a good someone put his thumbs in his pocket. When he put his thumbs like that, everyone knew that. Okay, that was his way of hitting. So I think I just gave away the answer. Is that if I come across a pasuk I don't like on Daf Tzav Tes in the Secha Sanhedrin in Mishle Ben Sira, I'm just going to dismiss it. Except Abaye, right? But when I come up to a pasuk in Mishlei Ben David, now I'm reading Tanakh. When I come up to a pasuk, I'm reading in Tanakh that doesn't fit my sensitivity, my understanding, my sense of how we've evolved as parents and teachers, right? What word has to be reevaluated here? These four words, Shifto, right? This pasuk is 100% right. But we will allow, this is not just modern orthodoxy talking, this is just sensibility. We will allow an evolution of what the pasuk means by shifto that is necessary to this one. Right? So what does shifto mean 60 years ago? Stick a belt, I don't know, whatever else they're dealing with. Yeah. What does shifto mean now? And this, by the way, this is brilliant because in Tanakh, shevet is actually used to describe the tongue. The tongue looks like a rod. You're going to hit someone. What does that mean? No. Discipline. The word shifto means discipline here. If you don't discipline, this is absolutely true. You can see the adults that were indulged. Right, in my day, if the teacher calls home, the first thing you walk in that door after school is, what did you do today? Why did you do this? Parents always took the teacher's side. Today, you can get sued if you call home. They'll sue you. Yeah. You can't call home and tell a parent, your child is misbehaving and ruining it for the entire class. You might get fired over that today. Who knows? I don't know. You have to be very careful how you discipline kids today. Lots changed very quickly. Right? Okay, I'm not saying some of it is good, some of it isn't, but that's what I think the word shifto here is given to interpretation. But what we don't do is we don't throw it all out because, well, this just didn't make sense to me. You can't do that if it's in Tanakh. Okay? All right, that's on canonization. All right, we're going to continue going down, but make sure you bring this back to class next time. All right? Bring your Mishleis. I'm not even sure if we're going to be opening the... Maybe next class we might be opening the book. We have class on Tuesday, right? Tuesday and next Thursday also, right? Okay, great. Excellent. Thanks, everyone, for being here. Okay, now, your name is...